Hey, Brian.
Hey, Matt, how's it going?
I'm doing great.
Good.
Last time there were a few comments about Dave Grohl.
Yeah, I saw them. I didn't know if I should have been flattered or offended, but I was always a Foo Fighters fan, so I went with flattered. But then I also went and got a haircut. So
Okay, well.
this week we're gonna have hopefully new commenters saying I look like newer, hotter celebrities.
And I am wearing glasses, which is a change. So I will
We can
have
just go
people.
in anonymously to comments, and I'll say that you look like Brad Pitt, and you can say that I look like whomever,
I don't know
somebody.
Brad Pitt, but I did want to give him some options. And this may be wishful thinking, but some of the people that I've been compared to in the past have been Jacob Dylan, Topper Shutt, who's a local meteorologist here.
It's obscure, but okay.
Paul Rudd, but I think every guy thinks that they're like Paul Rudd, so I won't count that
Or
one.
wishes they were, yeah.
Wishes they were. And then there's this sort of obscure, well, obscure to me, Spanish singer, Hispanic, I guess, singer, whose last name I think is Cross. So feel free in the comments, let us know the celebrity we most resemble.
Okay,
And
that'll
by
be
the
fun.
I saw something
Fun and
great.
self-indulgent. Sorry,
Exactly.
say again.
They never comment what I ask them to comment on, so. But I
Got
heard
it.
someone say that Dave Grohl, this was the Phil Collins of the 90s, because he came out from out the behind the drum set and then was a front man.
It's an
So.
interesting take. I think of Phil Collins as being sort of a lame,
Yeah.
and Dave Grohl as having had at least a moment of awesomeness and a really long career of just decent music making. And
Yeah.
He's never really made that album that makes, well, at least I haven't heard it, but I haven't been paying attention for the last couple of years. It makes you want to retch because how could you have ever liked somebody who could possibly make a album this bad? So good on him for that.
Yeah, I think Phil Collins isn't my favorite, but some of the work that they did as a band, that Genesis did with
Oh,
Collins
he's
as the
a
lead, was
and
pretty.
he was yeah he sang as the drummer too, which is so unusual and difficult
Yeah,
actually. So
Don Henley also with the
yeah
Eagles was another one. So,
yeah so not without talent, but possibly without merit.
yeah.
Anyway, I think we're getting distracted from much more interesting topics like Charlie Crist.
Exactly. So, huge uproar in the conservative blogosphere today and yesterday, really, about Charlie Crist, very popular governor of Florida, who is leaving. He's not going to run for re-election in Florida. He's going to run for U.S. Senate to replace the retiring Senator Mel Martinez. There was already a very acceptable candidate, Marco Rubio, who's Hispanic, conservative, has been in the race. And the NRSC, John Cornyn and Mitch McConnell, the minority leader, have already endorsed, within minutes, endorsed Crist. And there's an uproar from conservatives about this and some parallels being drawn between the Toomey Specter Ridge race and what's happening down in Florida. So I am prepared with some examples, but just what are your thoughts, I guess, initially on that?
Well, okay. I mean, when I heard the news about the NRSC supporting Crist, I wasn't surprised at all. I mean, you recall that when Toomey announced his challenge to Specter, he didn't have universal support within his caucus, but McConnell was there for him, and the Senate is clubby, and establishmentarian figures in any party end up with support from their party's main institutions. So I wasn't surprised to see Crist get the nod. At the same time, there's this sort of obvious tension with the conservative movement, which is
Yeah.
right now in sort of intense purification mode or something like that.
Well, let me say this too, and a couple people have noted this today, but it's funny because a lot of the people who have sort of been arguing the pragmatic argument have said, Republicans cannot win without Hispanics. So we've got a great Hispanic candidate running in Florida right now, a very qualified, very charismatic candidate. And the first thing they do, Republicans do, to court this Hispanic, you know, growing voting bloc, is to screw this guy over and support Charlie Crist. And I forget who it was, but someone even noted, you know, I think this is actually an email chain I was reading. Believe it or not, conservatives, Politico doesn't know this, but conservatives also have and have had for years an email chain.
Oh, really?
A list,
so,
yeah.
So are any of those conservatives who are on that email chain, are they the sort of conservatives that would bash liberals for being on an email chain? Just wondering.
I don't think there was any hypocrisy, actually.
Okay, interesting.
So considering, I think this is where this comes from, I'm certainly not going to cite who said it,
sure.
because I don't remember, honestly. But in effect, you know, one person wrote something like, you know, this is ridiculous, they're taking out this great Hispanic conservative and replacing him with a liberal white guy. And then someone else chimed in, like, well, can we, you know, I'm not sure what color Charlie Crist is. Or he's more tan, because he's one of these guys. There's, I don't know what it is with some of these Republicans, but they really have these amazing dark tans. And I honestly cannot trust anybody who is that tan.
who sprays on
I don't know what they're doing.
Skin color.
I don't know what they're doing, but it's a little bit weird. So.
Go ahead.
Well, okay, I just wanted to quickly read some of these. And then what I'd love to do is get your take on the parallels of what you've seen in the Netroots with you guys fighting the sort of insiders. Because I have a theory. But so John Hawkins wrote, Cornyn and the NRSC are actually endorsing a guy who will end up voting against the GOP half the time he gets in the Senate over a credible conservative candidate. Ed Morrissey actually says this smacks of a deal cut to get Crist to skip a re-election campaign to go after the Senate seat. Crist openly supported the Porculus plan, which would have put him with Arlen Specter, Snow, and Collins as the only Republicans in Congress who did. Cornyn himself fought against Porculus, so why is the NRSC endorsing Crist? Eric Erickson, who has been some of the bluntest comments and arguably the best here, you know, he said the other day, it's not an understatement to say the heart and soul of the GOP will be determined in the Florida election. Will we go with tanned, telegenic tax hikers with dubious personal issues, which plays into my next topic, or young, telegenic conservative reformers who are not afraid to speak up for freedom? Between Charlie Crist and Marco Rubio, that is what we have. Count me with Rubio.
Okay. Well, you think that those reactions sort of parallel the way liberal activists respond when, you know, a reform candidate, primaries, you know, a centrist Democrat or something like that.
Well, I have two sort of competing theories. Maybe you can help me settle them. One theory says that Democrats, at least lately, have realized that the net roots, they need to be on the same page. And when Obama won, that was sort of the defining moment where the net roots candidate and the establishment kind of joined together. Conversely, Republican leaders seem to take great joy in ticking off conservative bloggers. They do it all the time. And maybe this is because we haven't quite got the strength yet to make them pay for that. Or maybe it's just philosophically their instincts are liberal, our instincts are conservative. So one theory says that that you guys, if this were in a bizarro world, you would have been on my side or on the liberal Rubio side. But then the other way of looking at it is the Democrats have elected a lot of, you know, Heath Schulers out there. And liberal bloggers didn't object because they said, hey, it's North Carolina. You know, what are you going to do? So I wanted to get your take on if this were in reverse, where would the liberal blogosphere be?
Oh, I think, I think that first theory is off. I mean, the Netroots, I mean, my recollection is that in the primaries, the Netroots were really more in as much as they were for anybody, they were for Edwards. And they didn't, you know, they didn't treat Obama the way they would have treated, you know, a Lieberman nomination or something like that. Although, yeah, obviously by then he wasn't in the party anymore. But it was sort of an uneasy alliance. I mean, Obama hasn't always done what the Netroots by and large want him to, and that continues. And, you know, he gets taken to task by them day in and day out, particularly on national security issues, on torture, on stuff like that, where, you know, some of the stuff that they really liked about him in the primaries and the general election, he's sort of reneging on. So I think it's much more, you know, I think that if, yeah, the proper analogy, I think, is to the pragmatic decision Democrats make and are still making, or, you know, what they consider the pragmatic decision to support the candidates they think that can win, you know, given the demographics of a region.
Right.
And, I mean, the Netroots, for instance, are supremely ticked that Obama and Biden and Ed Rendell just, you know, like leapfrogged themselves to see who could, you know, most ingratiate themselves to Arlen Specter.
Right. That actually ties in great with this, because I think, I mean, Rubio is not just some, like, fly-by-night candidate. He's incredibly talented, and I think he could be an up-and-comer. And I think what really has angered conservative bloggers is not that Crist is running. It's that instead of letting these guys sort of have a vigorous debate and letting the voters decide, that the party establishment immediately coronated Crist.
Right.
And so I think that's the problem.
You know, that's the, you know, stale thing they almost always do. It's why the Democratic establishment and Barack Obama campaigned for Lieberman.
Right.
And you know, so there's this potential that Joe Sestak will get in the race. And I, you know, the Netroots don't really know Sestak. And he voted, you know, for instance, on the FISA Amendments Act in 2008, he voted for it. And I think there's still some bad feeling about that. So they haven't really...
Right. I mean, I think Specter would be in a lot worse trouble if there were a clear contrast.
If there were
Ned Lamont or something.
Yeah. Right. Right. But it, you know, he could. There's still a lot of time. He could, you know, maybe apologize for that vote, move to the left sufficiently, et cetera, and then you would see sort of. I think you would see a sort of a bunch of blog posts along the lines of the ones you read, trashing the Democratic establishment for continuing to back Specter when there's this recanted and liberal Democrat running against him.
And it will be interesting to see, by the way, if there clearly is going to be a backlash, and to the extent that Toomey and Rubio can capitalize off of it, because conservatives probably wouldn't have been that excited about Rubio if he had just been running. It is Crist's entry that makes him all of a sudden, like David Ferdoso today put up an interview at National Review with Rubio, and I do hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly. I can't imagine how I could pronounce it differently, but who knows.
I think that's right. I think you got it.
I'm not known for my pronunciations. But, you know, I'm guessing Ferdoso wouldn't have done the interview or put it up so prominently had this not been, you know,
right.
a buzz.
Oh, sure, sure. I mean, one thing I would, you know, and obviously the right blogosphere doesn't need to take my advice, doesn't need to think my advice is worth salt, but Crist supported the stimulus package, but his incentives as a governor are vastly different than they will be, or rather different than they will be as a senator. And, you know, I don't know that you can necessarily map his support for it as a governor to what he would have done if he had been in the Senate this year. And so, you know, I don't know much about the rest of Crist's record other than that he is, you know, considered a more liberal Republican. But when he's in the Senate, he'll be faced with such different pressures that I can imagine him moving right.
Which brings up the next point, which I think is certainly less substantive, but is no doubt now playing a factor. You know, when I quoted Erickson, he mentioned that Crist was a tantalogenic tax hiker with dubious personal issues. I don't know exactly what Eric was referring to, but one can guess that it might have been the Crist is gay rumors, which have been around forever. Today, and here's a name that I do not know how to pronounce, Rihan Salan. Now, see, the reason you know that is because he is actually more liberal than conservative. but he actually wrote a very good piece for the Daily Beast today where he made some very substantive points, but he started off talking about the Crist is gay rumor issue. Yesterday, Marcos Melitzis mentioned, so the closeted Crist is about to get the Spectre treatment. And as I noted today, it was actually Chuck Todd who first publicly questioned whether or not Crist's marriage was a marriage of convenience. So it'll be interesting to see. Now this is part of the narrative. And so it's day two of the Crist, you know, controversy. By the way, let me just say again for anybody tuning in, if you hear very weird sounds, it is my pugs. One of my pugs, Mr. Little Jeans, is now outside because the snoring is so loud. Unfortunately, did you hear that? He's like howling and crying.
I can't hear him. I can't hear him.
You'll hear it when you watch it. You'll probably
hear
it.
That's very cute.
It's getting they're adorable, but see, that's the compassionate type guy I am. I love those pugs. But in any event, this is now part of the story, and it will be unfortunate because it's actually not been conservatives by and large who've raised this issue. Marcos, as I mentioned, talked about him being quote-unquote closeted, but it'll be interesting to see if this continues to be part of the narrative or not.
Well, I mean, if there's merit to it, I mean, I'm sure that it'll be kicked around, but if there's merit to it, there are bloggers and activists who take on the left and right who take an active interest in outing gay politicians, and you know, if there's truth to it that and it's provable, he's going to be under the microscope for the next what is it, you know, year.
Yeah.
And it'll come out. I think it would be a shame if that was the ultimate reason why he went down in a Republican primary.
I think we've got enough, in my opinion, legitimate reasons to take on Crist as a liberal. And my prediction is if something does come out, it will be from the left. It won't be his conservative primary opponent that brings it out. In fact, if you look at who's already raised it as an issue,
the loudest. I think I'd agree with that.
So it's unfortunate.
You have liberal bloggers like Mike Rogers who you know make a living in a way off of outing closeted gay Republicans.
I think part of it though, and correct me if I'm wrong, but my take has always been that this is targeting closeted gay Republicans who are anti-gay.
Right.
And I don't know that Crist is. I mean, my guess is that Crist is not.
I'm actually going to go back on what I'm not sure that that's true. I'm not sure Crist is anti-gay or not, but I'm also not sure whether this sort of movement on the gay rights left is concerned so much with whether the Republicans in question vote against gay rights. I think it's their party affiliation that really matters, right? I could be wrong, but
I would respect them more if it was a hypocrisy issue. I don't know, that's just horrible. But anyway, I'm not a big Charlie Crist fan, but I hope that this does not become an issue. And for one thing, I just think it's despicable to go there. But also because conservatives will probably be blamed for doing it, even if it's not our fault. And so,
right. I could see a conservative doing it because the right doesn't want him in the race or doesn't want him to win the race, and that's one way to help ensure he loses. But who knows? I mean, yeah. we're talking about something that may not actually happen.
So, yeah, I guess the reason I even brought this up is that I feel like the way that the cable news is becoming very tabloidy, and we had, you know, you can't turn on the TV without seeing Miss California now, that the situation is tailor-made for 5 years ago, even, this might have not come up, but already we're on the second day of the Chris, you know, story, and already we have, you know, prominent writers bringing up the rumors that he's gay. I mean, these rumors have been around forever, and they've largely not been talked about. I mean, Chuck Todd on MSNBC one time made a sort of inside joke that a lot of people probably didn't even get, except for political insiders like Chuck Todd. Now, all the people who were on, you know, the set with him, they cracked up because they all know the rumors. But I feel like we're entering into kind of a new era where this would be great fodder for, you know, Fox and MSNBC to spend months on.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm sure they will. And I'm sure they'll get Miss California's take on it. She has strong, opinions.
Any excuse we can have to show B-roll of her in a bikini, they will avail themselves of that opportunity. So
I wanted, before we switch topics, I wanted to get back to something you said about Marco Rubio, that the Republicans need to be warming to Hispanics, and that that by nominating and possibly electing a Hispanic senator in Florida, they could do this. I don't know anything about Rubio's record, so I can't go so far as to say that's sort of like saying that Michael Steele will warm the Republicans to the black community. So I don't know what his take on like immigration and labor reform are. I just don't. So
And let me make the point too that I'm not a fan of identity politics, and therefore I wouldn't support him for that reason. My point is really the hypocrisy that sort of liberal Republicans have been saying, throwing their hands up in the air, saying we've got to moderate. And part of that has been we have to appeal to Hispanics. So it's been coming from the Salam, Raihan Salam / Mark Duthit / David Frum wing, okay? They've been arguing we've got to do all these things to moderate, and then also that we need to do more outreach to Hispanics because the numbers don't add up. You just mathematically can't win without them. And with that in context, I find it ironic that those very same people, well, in this case, actually, maybe not those same people, but the sort of moderate liberal wing of the party is now endorsing Charlie Crist over Rubio.
But if Charlie Crist had, you know, 2006 era McCain like views on immigration, and those views came to predominate the party, which, I mean, I think this is fantasy, but that would be a way to perhaps entice millions of Hispanics to vote Republican. Whereas nominating Marco Rubio to come in and put like a Hispanic face on, you know, the border fence is not going to accomplish that in the same way that you know, Michael Steele doing his thing, like, probably isn't going to change Republicans' numbers amongst black voters in 2010. And so, you know, I see what you're saying, but like, the thing about Crist is that his you know, his views on that issue could actually be better for the party as far as enticing Hispanic voters than Rubio's. And
yeah,
I think
John McCain didn't win the Hispanic vote. You tell me a Republican who has done more to sort of, I would say, pander to a constituency, and I think pander is the wrong word because I think he actually believes in this amnesty. But John McCain, you cannot find a more pro-amnesty Republican than John McCain, lost the Hispanic vote.
But he sponsored this bill in 2006 with Kennedy, and and the conservative base hated that. And then, to atone for that, in 2008, he said, I would filibuster the bill I want sponsored, and I've learned my lesson, and I don't think immigration reform should happen, at least not in a way that, you know.
Do you think John McCain would have, if he had been able to run as the John McCain of 2006, that he would have won the Hispanic vote?
I think he would have done better. I think he would have on the margins done better, and the margins could mean hundreds of thousands of votes. Now, I think that if not only had he run on that platform, but if he had as a politician, as a leader, somehow impressed upon the right, from Olympia Snow through Jim DeMint, that Republicans needed to get with the sort of more liberal views on immigration, then maybe you could have won the vote, or at least, you know, really, really competed for it. But not just because there's a senator who runs for an office who, you know, then that's not enough. I mean, when the party infrastructure is still opposes broad reform, then that party is going to lose the voters who care about that.
Gotcha.
Reform.
All right. Well, I'm sorry. We
dragged this one on.
Yeah. And the problem is that we could, like, over a beer, sit here and talk about immigration for the next hour. So should probably talk about a pressing issue that you brought to my attention, which you've actually done some, I think, terrific reporting on already. You want to set it up?
Oh, okay. Don Johnson, yeah. is something that I've been reporting on for weeks and weeks now. But
which I just learned was not the guy from Miami Vice.
Right. Yeah, it was, you know, when I first started at TPM, I was wondering, why do Republicans have such strong feelings about a washed up actor from the, you know,
yeah,
whatever, 70s?
And it's because he would push his sleeves up like this and wear those white jackets.
He drove an awesome car. I mean, that's, conservatives like awesome cars, as near as I can tell. Don Johnson, D-A-W-N and then J-O-H-N-S-E-N, is Obama's choice to be the chief of the Office of Legal Counsel, basically to have Jay Bybee's old job. She's uniquely qualified in that for about a year or more, she was the acting chief of the Office of Legal Counsel. So she's done the job before. She knows how to do it. Since she was nominated, there's been murmurings and rumors and suggestions that her nomination would be filibustered. And there have been somewhat what seemed to me to be red herring objections to her nomination. Not that nobody who espouses and believes them, but that this isn't really the basis for the fact that seemingly 40 Republicans plan to vote against her, which is that she, about 15 years ago, worked for NARAL. Co-authored a paper with a footnote that said something vaguely controversial on the right about abortion. She had a blog, I think, where she said some shrill things. Then she was been a professor at Indiana University, and she worked in the Clinton administration. So her nomination had sort of been moved out of committee, but sort of very partisan terms. Arlen Specter, who at the time was a ranking member of the Judiciary Committee, refused to weigh in, didn't vote one way or another on her. And that's how she got out under those terms. But Reid hasn't scheduled a floor vote for her, and people who are following the story were wondering when that was going to happen. Last night, Reid announced that he doesn't have the votes. For Don Johnson, he needs, he says, a couple Republicans. Well, he has one. He has Dick Lugar, who's a moderate Republican senator from Indiana, which is where Don Johnson lives.
Which, by the way, I think is sorry to interrupt too much.
Sure.
But it smacks of Brownback and Roberts supporting Sebelius.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
it's just ridiculous that because someone's from your state.
It goes back to the point I made at the beginning about the, like, establishmentarians. I mean, I mean, maybe for Lugar's a moderate, and perhaps he would have supported her anyway. But it seems odd that, like, Olympia Snow and Susan Collins are saying they're not sure, but that Dick Lugar, who is to their right, is.
I mean, there's thousands of people here in Virginia that I wouldn't support. You know what I mean? Just because I'm from the same state as you.
But you haven't been a senator for however many years Dick Lugar has.
That's for sure.
Yeah. Anyway, so they have one Republican, Dick Lugar, and there are 59 members in the Democratic caucus. And if I am doing my math correctly, 59 plus 1 equals 60. And that should be enough to get Don Johnson through. And Reid is saying, can't do it yet, which means that there is a Democrat somewhere in the mix who's saying that or suggesting anyway that he'll support a filibuster.
Right. And it's not Ben Nelson, right? I think you reported that Nelson will vote against her, but not to support a filibuster.
Right. Well, I haven't, you know, nobody before a vote nobody before a controversial vote will say anything that explicit, but his staff very strongly suggested to me, you know, that Ben Nelson has concerns with her, but that his record by and large indicates that he votes for cloture on executive nominees of both parties, and then even if he opposes them and then votes against them after they clear the procedural hurdle. So that they can get an up or down vote, and the record bears that out. You know, we did the research, and his staff basically said he expects to vote for cloture or something along those lines. So I don't think it's Ben Nelson, but it's not 100. It's hard to 100% rule that out, which leaves Arlen Specter, who. Said the day that he switched parties, or maybe the day after, that he opposes her nomination. But he didn't say one way or another whether he would support a filibuster of her nomination. And I'm trying to get an answer from his staff.
You know, the funny thing is, I like Arlen Specter better as a Democrat.
Yeah,
it's ironic, isn't it? That cantankerous nature is really
refreshing.
I don't
know how long it's going to be true. I mean, like, eventually he's going to have to move left, so enjoy it while you can, I guess. But the incentives, they're going to have to kick in, or else he's crazy. But
well, there's always that possibility.
Yeah, that's true. So there's a Democrat who seemingly won't support Don Johnson, who will actually filibuster her.
That is interesting. Is there any effort on the left to track down or sort of winnow down who the culprit might be?
Well, I think there's a pretty strong belief that it's probably Specter, possibly Nelson, but that it's probably not anyone other than those two. Probably Specter, probably not Nelson, but certainly. No, but it's doubtful that I think there's some lurking Democrat out there who's not announcing it, but actually opposes her. What you're seeing on the left, and Greenwald wrote about it, and I think one of the Coast front pagers, or maybe Coast himself, wrote about how this is a failure of leadership, both Harry Reid and Dick Durbin, but also the administration. For nominating this person and then not seemingly doing the whatever pressuring they have to do to get
did you get the sense,
even their own party, let alone one or two moderate Republicans, to
when
come
Lieber,
over.
When Reid couldn't, when Reid promised Specter he would keep his tenure and then he didn't, did you think that was a sign of weakness, that Reid can't keep his promises, can't deliver? That's how I took it.
I mean, I wasn't so clear. I mean, I think that, I mean, we on the left, there are doubts as to, you know, Reid's leadership, I think. Not always. I mean, he's got a tougher job in a way than Pelosi. He's got much less power. I saw that as... I, you know, it's unclear what exactly Reid promised, I think, Specter for the moment, and it was never his call to make. And so if he made that promise to Spectre, either he was being disingenuous to Spectre, or Spectre is exaggerating what was promised or something. So I wasn't all that clear on that. I don't know what's going on. I mean, I suppose Spectre could just be, you know, pissed that he didn't get everything he wanted out of the Switch, and that he, you know, he's now the junior member on a lot of committees, but and so is opposing Johnson as a sort of fuck you to Reed, but it's hard to know, and it's odd that there hasn't been sort of any pressure, you know, rhetorical pressure, you know, give Johnson an up or down vote type right. stuff from and that Emmanuel hasn't been able to use whatever influence
this,
he has.
This story, though, it doesn't appear to have become an embarrassment yet. I mean, this is not a high-profile story yet. I mean, it's still somewhat inside baseball, right?
A little bit. I mean, it's a big deal among, like, liberal interest groups.
But the reason I bring it up is, like, when I, you know, there aren't a lot of conservatives talking about this. You'll find it at, like, lifenews.com. Jill Stanek, who's a very good blogger, but one who focuses pretty exclusively on the life issue. I did find a great post, and anybody who wants to know the conservative side of this, Andrew McCarthy at National Review has written a good post. He says, and this is the part that you referred to as a small footnote. He says, her bizarre equation of pregnancy and slavery was not an off-the-cuff remark. It was her considered position in a 1989 brief filed in the Supreme Court. And in effect, a woman is constantly aware for 9 months that her body is not her own. The state has conscripted her body for its own needs. Such forced pregnancy, her words, she contends violates the 13th Amendment, which prohibits slavery. She also wrote, losers in the contraceptive lottery no more consent to pregnancy than pedestrians consent to being struck by drunk drivers. So,
well, okay, but those footnotes were in papers that had multiple authors. I mean, or in briefs that had multiple authors. She was questioned about this before the committee, and even if she secretly believed this 15 years ago, said, you know, it's explicitly that, you know, that there is no comparison between pregnancy and slavery. And it's really unclear to me what difference that makes anyway. I mean, even if she had this sort of weird view that pregnancy was like forced slavery when there's no, when, you know, the legal right to abortion is not absolute, what that has to do with the sort of work she'll be doing at the Office of Legal Counsel, where she'll sort of be advising the executive agencies on what their policies should be and you know what the like law within the
all right. Well, so here's McCarthy's essential rebuttal. He says this job authoritatively interprets the law for the Attorney General, and in so doing drives administration legal policy. OLC's credibility is derived from its reputation for apolitical academic discipline, its commitment to informing policymakers of what the law is, rather than what staffers believe the law should be. Johnson is, for that reason, a poor fit. She is an ideologue and an unabashed one. So, whether you agree or not, that I think that sums up at least what conservatives will say. But let me point out again, not a lot of conservatives are writing about this or talking about it. It's been almost relegated to conservative religious blogs. I haven't
right.
seen
well,
it on...
because the religious right, I think, is pretty earnest about why they oppose her, just as they would oppose just about any pro-choice Obama nominee. I think there's a subtext here about torture that makes conservatives uncomfortable. I mean, that quote from McCarthy is kind of, it's ironic, considering that President Bush's first OLC chief was Jay Bybee, and his deputy was John Yoo.
Yeah, he gets into that, too. Check out the piece. I won't read it all, but he addresses that, so.
and And Johnson, Johnson is, whereas she does not, if she ever stood by the idea that pregnancy is like slavery, she doesn't anymore. She has had a consistent and principled view about the torture issue the whole time, and so many people in the Democratic Party too, but I think more in the Republican Party are
let me just
like implicated, scared of this issue, you know.
Let me just draw the. I mean, let me say, you're right. I think the torture issue is a tougher issue for conservatives to talk about. For one thing, we've been talking about the life issue for 25 years, so
right.
The talking points are, and you know where you stand on it. It's not as nuanced. But I do want to make a point. I mean, she worked for NARAL, which was formerly known as the National Abortion Rights Action League. This is not working for Planned Parenthood. I mean, I think conservatives would not be happy with someone working for Planned Parenthood. But NARAL, it's like the difference between working for the Right to Life versus working for Operation Rescue or the American Life League. NARAL, their goal is not to protect the right to choose. It's to protect the right to abortion. And in many cases, I mean, I would certainly say to encourage it. So it is not surprising that conservatives would find her to be unacceptable. I'm sure. I mean, am I right in terms of, would you sort of compare? It's certainly a more liberal organization than Planned Parenthood.
Well, I mean, yes. I mean, well, they serve different purposes, I guess. But here's sort of the this is reminiscent, I guess, of in a way of the fight over Hilda Solis to be the Labor Secretary. That Obama had these views that he espoused, that he ran on, and won an election on them. And in order to implement those views, he has to appoint like-minded people to help him run the government. His view about labor is extremely different from George Bush's view, and so he appointed Hilda Solis to be Labor Secretary. And the idea that the Secretary of Labor would be somebody who, you know, supports unions made her unacceptable to Republicans. But to say then that she should be subject to filibuster is to say that we reject the results of the election in a way, you know? You won the election. Now your job is to fulfill the promises you made on the campaign, and we're going to say you can't do that because...
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think I would...
I mean, this gets into an issue I want to talk about a little bit, yeah. which is the filibuster, and maybe we're running out of time and can save that for another time. So if Obama needed somebody to help run the civil rights division of the Justice Department and picked a lawyer from, you know, a senior lawyer from the ACLU, well, that's probably not somebody who George Bush would have appointed.
Right. I mean, I agree elections have consequences, but there is senators, these people must be confirmed by the Senate. And I think your theory that a president should get whoever they want is a fine theory, but the law is that they have to be confirmed by the Senate. Therefore, they really – so you get where I'm going with this.
I do get where you're going. I guess I wanted to make to say it anyway about the NARAL issue is that NARAL is an activist organization. But, a lot of people go back and forth between activism and politics. It's not the most unusual move in the world, and I can imagine ACLU lawyers being part of the Obama administration or People for the American Way or, on and on down the line, and I can imagine, union activists getting jobs at the Labor Department. I mean, it's just, it's what happens. It's part of the fallout of the election.
Right, and I think from a conservative standpoint, you know, we know that we're not going to get... somebody who is adamantly pro-life, but maybe we'd rather have someone who worked at Planned Parenthood than someone who worked at the National Abortion Rights Action League,
right.
You know? And so if we can stop her, maybe we'll end up with someone who's moderately pro-choice as opposed to being pro-abortion.
Yeah.
So
Greenwald asked a question on his blog today. I think it was Mukasey, he pointed out, was confirmed by the Senate with 53 votes. didn't need 60 votes, you know? There's no way for anybody to say that it would be inappropriate in a way for somebody to say that Republicans have to get with the program and acknowledge that Don Johnson is awesome and vote yes for her, you know? But I think
let me say Don Johnson is awesome.
It's sort of, I think that if Don Johnson had worked for Planned Parenthood as opposed to Narel, you'd still be seeing this.
Yeah, but you know, remember last week we talked about Sonia Sotomayor.
Sonia Sotomayor, yeah.
And in fairness, I mean, I said that if this is the worst we've got on her, then, you know, it's probably not going to add up to much.
Right.
I will use that as my credibility as a reasonable person to then say, if in fact Don Johnson said that, referred to a pregnant woman as fetal containers, and really compared pregnancy to slavery, that is, I think, beyond the pale, clearly. And so I do not think that the average person who elected Barack Obama would support that. I think that this is paying homage to the liberal special interests who gave him money and turned out, you know, people to go door to door for him, not for the regular guy in, you know, Southern Virginia who pulled the lever for Obama. I think they would find this one to be an extreme choice.
Well, I mean, I can send you links to you know, transcripts of the testimony that she gave before the Judiciary Committee, or please do.
Or you could work
the Conservative Network.
Yeah.
Doug Kamiak to tell you why he supports her.
No. Well, he's a liberal who supported Barack Obama too. but let me say, please do send that to me, because I think I want to write about this, because I don't think there's been enough written about it from conservatives. So
no, I mean, I'll email you as soon as we're done taping here.
I appreciate it.
I know where to find this.
So now, and that's one of the reasons liberal bloggers write about this stuff. You know where to find it. That's a whole other topic for another day.
But, yeah. Yeah, maybe Bill Scheer should never come back to join.
Yeah, well, if Bill Scheer is like in his basement right now, you know, like, or in your basement tied up or something with a ball gag. I will be freaked out. Because I know a lot.
That's how much I care about this week in vlogs.
We should, you know, I didn't mention Bill, but our best goes out to Bill. He's second week off, and mm-hmm. And I appreciate you filling in for him so ably, and maybe too ably sometimes. So the next one, I can't decide if the next one is us finishing with a light topic, or if it's us finishing with. I mean, we've talked about, is Charlie Crist gay? We've talked about abortion. I mean, we're pretty much tackling every, like, controversial, uncomfortable issue we could. So
sure.
The next one is should be lighter. It's about Wanda Sykes. But this first quote I'm going to read from Eric Erickson from Red State, he says, he was talking about her routine at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. It's the first time in recorded history a lesbian has stood before America's media elite and performed oral favors on a man, and not just any man. She did so to the President of the United States. It was a Lewinsky moment without the cigar and stained dress. Never mind that the American elite would never dream of inviting anyone to speak at the Correspondents' Dinner who supported a Republican. But the fawning hagiography to Obama continues, and it does so with some pointed remarks about Rush Limbaugh and Dick Cheney. Hot Air's Ed Morrissey writes, "I find it fascinating the media would and the White House shrieked. I'm sorry, in the media world and the White House shrieked when Rush said he hoped Obama would fail, but laughed at Sykes calling Rush a terrorist last night, including the president who felt so threatened by Rush he criticized him by name in the first days of his presidency. If Rush had called Sykes the 20th terrorist and wished kidney disease on her, I doubt that Obama would be laughing." And then Carol Platt LeBow, who blogs at Town Hall, and I'm still not sure exactly how to pronounce her last name, even though I also blog there. Call me. Certainly President George W. Bush had his faults, but it's pretty hard to imagine him laughing at a comic wished kidney failure on, say, Keith Olbermann. So that's the news from Lake Wobegon. What's the left? Are they defending Wanda Sykes? Where do they come down on this?
I can't say I actually know what they say about Wanda Sykes. I think the most interesting take, and the take I'll align myself with, was Matt Iglesias's. And that is that there's pretty much no aspect of the, or no element to the White House Correspondents' Dinner that isn't totally problematic and corrupt. With the exception of the fact that every year that gives a comedian, some comedian, a chance to stand up right next to the president, whoever he is or she is, and you know, have a speak truth to power moment. And that's sort of what Stephen Colbert did. And that was something Wanda Sykes could have done and did a little. I mean, she had the joke about how if she bombed that night, you know, Tim Geithner would be there to write her a check. So not everything she said was necessarily, you know, just sugarcoating. But, you know, the jokes were mean. They made me laugh, but they were mean. I always feel like there's never any – people get conveniently offended at you know, when the moment strikes. And, you know, my friend Adam Serwer wrote this amazing post at Tapped where he talked about how offensive Wanda Sykes' comedy routine was. And here's what he wrote. He says, Wanda Sykes' comedy routine at the White House Correspondents' Dinner was really offensive. In it, Sykes suggested that conservative radio host Rush Limbaugh is supported by Hamas, that Islamists are constantly issuing Limbaugh's talking points. She joked about terrorists supporting conservatives in general, suggesting that recent violent events in Iraq are attempts by terrorists to swing the upcoming midterm election in favor of Republicans. Then she got really personal. She joked that Limbaugh was a racist who doesn't want black people to, quote, escape the underclass. She accused him of being responsible for killing, quote, a million babies a year, and aired her friend's theory that Limbaugh himself was a terrorist attack, a follow-up to 9/11. She also most disgustingly said that if conservatives kept apologizing to Limbaugh, they'd eventually contract, quote, unquote, anal poisoning, whatever that is. She wondered when Republicans
would finally... Don't laugh about that. Millions of Americans die every year from anal poisoning.
I know, I'm sure. She wondered when Republicans would finally stop bending over and grabbing their ankles for Limbaugh and finally concluded that Limbaugh was, quote, just a bad guy. And, of course, the punchline of the whole post is that those aren't things Wanda Sykes said at all, but rather things that Rush Limbaugh has said about Obama. You know, I like Obama better than I like Rush Limbaugh, and so when I hear somebody make a joke about Rush Limbaugh that is, you know, in poor taste, I laugh, and when I hear somebody make a joke about Barack Obama that is in poor taste, I'm less likely to laugh. I'm also sort of less likely to make a major political point about it, except for the fact that like Rush Limbaugh has more power over the conservative movement than Wanda Sykes has over the liberal movement. And so it seems like, I don't know, if this had been, you know, if this had been Rahm Emanuel making these jokes or something like that, then, you know, okay. But to say that A, what power does Wanda Sykes have? And B, Barack Obama sitting there at what's supposed to be a jovial event, and if he had just started scowling, and I don't know, it would have.
Yeah, I mean, what are you going to do? If you're Obama,
Chavez,
what are you going to do?
Was he supposed to,
I mean,
yeah, like if he took the book from Chavez, and people were you know, tried to make an issue of it. But what was he supposed to do?
Yeah.
Like frisbeed the book at Chavez's face and said, you know, like.
I mean, I agree. I would have probably taken the book too.
Yeah.
But here's the thing.
Politically, I thought Gibbs. I had a sort of a pool. I set up a pool in the office to inspired by a friend of mine to guess who'd be the first member of the White House press corps to ask Gibbs whether it was appropriate, whether the joke was appropriate, whether it was appropriate for Obama to laugh. I guessed that it would be Jake Tapper, but it turned out to be Jeff Zeleny. So I was wrong. And I thought Gibbs' response was predictable but appropriate. I mean, it would have been silly and politically detrimental, probably, for him to say, yeah, he thought the joke was funny.
Well, you make a good point about the person delivering it. I was much more offended when Barack Obama made fun of the Special Olympics than anything. Seriously. That was reprehensible. And you know what? I think that's the kind of thing that if you joke about that in your private life when the cameras aren't on, you slip up when the cameras are on. So I bet you Rahm Emanuel does say a lot more horrible things than Wanda Sykes did, too. I guess,
according to Barack Obama, yeah.
Well, yeah, and that was actually a funny joke, by the way, where he said that Mother's Day, he's not used to the word day coming after mother. Yeah. Right. But no, I think the problem and the reason that Wanda this that it's just because there's still, you know, this idea that the correspondence dinner, when you've got the president in the audience, that you're supposed to be more respectful. And I think that's what makes their story. I mean, if Wanda Sykes had delivered that at the Improv, nobody would have cared. But it's because it's in front of this audience and the president's there. And so that's what makes it, I think, newsworthy at least.
Yeah, newsworthy maybe, but these are sort of like strange standards for people. I try to stay more on the like reporting side of the blogosphere, but for people who are in this writing business to sort of get facts out to people, or at least claim that that's what they're trying to do. It's like a strange position to take that comedians should show up to the White House Correspondents' Dinner,
right,
and be like PG and sycophants, because to do otherwise is to, I mean, you know, you're a conservative, you should be an anti-royalist. He's not a king, he's an elected president, and he can taste his jokes, and he deserves to be told, you know, like if a comedian's going to address him, then that comedian, it's better if that comedian tells him jokes and sort of highlight the inconsistencies.
The president doesn't book the comedian either. I think it's the national press call that doesn't.
Sure.
But the jokes that do concern me, and what I did think was, you know, there is truth in humor. It's the sort of same principle, like if you get drunk and you say something, then you probably mean it. There's truth in humor, and when Obama joked about all the press voting for him, that was funny, but that to me also was the kind of thing that I thought was a more important maybe than what Wanda Sykes said, because it underscored, everybody laughed because it was true.
I get it. I mean, Bush had a similar line. I forget if it was at the it wasn't at the Correspondents' Dinner. It was at something else where he was addressing a bunch of like fantastically wealthy people.
Yeah.
And he said, something says people will call you blah 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 blah. I call you my base.
Yep.
Everyone likes.
And then McCain joked the same thing with the press when the press loved him before he ran for president. By the way, off topic, but my favorite all time National Press Club moment is when George W. Bush said something like, "We've got a lot of great people here. We've got Secretary of State." You know, and he goes through the thing and says, "Ozzy Osbourne." I thought his recognition of Ozzy Osbourne was a great moment in National Press Club history.
You do a pretty good Bush imitation.
Yeah, I just got it after 8 years, and now he's gone. And it'll take me like 8 years to do Obama, so.
Yeah.
Still not proven. I got the George H.W. Bush down, but that's not helping anybody either.
Yeah, well, he'll be dead soon. Oh, wait, did I say that? I thought we're not supposed to. We're not.
See, there is truth in humor, and I'm offended by that.
I'm sure. Again, it was a pleasure.
Yes.
So that's two in a row. We should fight more, I guess.
Let Bill Scher up for air if you don't mind.
Yeah, yeah. I'll take the Bob gag out of his ball gag out of his mouth. Deal?
Deal. Please.
Okay.
Excellent. Well, hey, very good, and I look forward to your email.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Thanks for reminding me.
And we got to come up with a catchphrase at the end, but I will just say good night and good luck.
Okay. All right. And same to you.
And live long and prosper.